Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to episode 78 of The Nero Show. In today's episode,
BMC have got a new endurance bike. We chat through the specs.
Managed to get our hands on some sales figures for the last 5 years for a big brand.
MV have doubled down on hookless technology.
Big YouTube roundup. And who is the biggest panderer when it comes to cycling content? All right, let's get into it. All right, massive shout to Laurie. Did a great job.
No, it was Bruce, wasn't it?
Was it Bruce? Yeah. No, that was Laurie. He just managed to lift two skips. The moment we hit record to actually start recording on air today, two skips were being removed out the front of our house. He's moved them. We commentated the whole procedure.
He's a smooth operator, Bruce. He got it done.
And we have some endurance bikes to chat about again, yes. Seemingly. We've just turned into an endurance bike channel.
Mm-hmm. BMC. The endurance bike, what have they done? Have they gone gravel? Have they gone climbing bike endurance? What are they doing with it? So let's see. It is called the Road Machine 01. Bunch of different ranges. What have they done? Marginal improvement.
Well, yes. Okay. The specs, look, the obviously we chatted about endurance bikes last week, went into a lot of detail about the challenge is selling these sort of things. I had a bit of a sook about the language used for it. So I'm paying particular attention to that. This bike has just been launched, and I want to have a look at how they're trying to flog this to us in terms of the language that they use. But, yeah, let's actually look at the specs for it. It's pretty obvious if you read this stuff. You want to maybe quickly mention?
Well, they've gone full. The description of it is like, it's like an 18-year-old's written it. So they've gone, when it comes to your one bike collection, we've now legitimately pushed the boundaries with the latest Road Machine. And then also similar, this Road Machine 012 build is a veritable rocket.
Rocket.
It's a rocket ship. So they've kind of gone a bit what's that generation that's?
TikTok generation.
A bit under me, isn't it? In the wording, which I kind of like, kind of makes it sound cool. So they've got a tune compliance concept endurance. It's got an ICS technology stealth cable routing and stealth dropout design. So no holding back on the kind of adjectives spaceshipifying the features on the bike, which, as you said, the endurance bikes do need that, don't they?
Yeah.
So I reckon that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. And from my perspective looking at this, I mean, yeah, the specs on it aren't that dramatic in terms of in the other endurance bike lineups. We've gone up to 40 mil tire clearance, which is just mind-blowing. Can I just point that out? But yeah, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Integrated bar and stem, like you said, the sleek, those hidden dropouts, that kind of stuff.
Stealth.
Just basically making them look sexy. But what I really, really like about the language that they've used to try and launch this bike is that they're trying to sell the concept that this bike is comfortable and fast. Well, sorry, comfortable equals fast. So you've got this sort of thing, the endurance formula, every aspect of endurance formula to achieve unrivaled comfort for real world riding, faster than ever while still entirely appropriate for every surface. So just trying to use the word fast. Yeah.
In Bike Radar's article, they've said, according to BMC, blah, 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 the aim was for it to be a fast accelerator, reactive handling. And then they put in while having space for tires and flex, but they are hitting on the fact that they want it to be stiff steel and reactive, which is what people are going to want to hear. They haven't mentioned aero. People do want to hear aero, so they haven't mentioned aero, but I think that it's good for this.
Because the features of the Hubbard endurance bike setup are here. They're like
storage box,
rear light, all this sort of stuff. That if that, and I think Cannondale did this with the Synapse thing. They went that angle. They went, hey, here's a real safe bike. We've just loaded it with safety stuff. Now there's potentially just as much design and performance in that bike that there is here, but the language is totally different. Even if you look at like the imagery on the website, it's like that kind of motion blurred type photography where the rider looks like they're going fast. So it's just there's a lot of the right language when it comes to trying to sell this to the endurance crowd. And I got to say, the bike, the colors, they look sexy. The language looks cool. I don't know what this TCC endurance thing is that they go. BMC are great for this. They just seem to invent acronyms and sort of, I don't know, like different kind of performance phrases. And I'm there going, oh, yeah? Oh, that's, you're in Switzerland? I suppose. Yeah, that must be fast. And so I don't know. I kind of can get around that sort of language and that look.
I can't get my head around, though, the way they do the model. So you've got the Road Machine 01, then Road Machine.
Mm-hmm.
But what does 01 mean? Because in Road Machine, what's the difference between Road Machine and Road Machine 01? Because the Road Machine is their, what's that, the old Road Machine? I just can't figure this out.
Yeah, that's the old one.
That's the old, but there's all still listed on their website. And then they've got the Road Machine 01X and the Road Machine X. So it looks like is 01 the new version? And then you've got the X version, which is for off-roading, for gravel. But I think it's the same frame. It's just different specs.
So confusing. They've got Road Machine 012. What?
Zero, yeah.
Road Machine 011.
Yeah.
What? Which is the better one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then, so the Road Machine 01X1, that's the name of the model, which is the Road Machine 01, so the new version, but it's the X version, and it's the one, which is the spec level, the one is the top spec level. So this has a suspension stem, and it's got the SRAM Force Explorer. So this is the gravel built version of that new Road Machine 01 frame. I just find the range quite confusing. Usually what the brands do is there's no more Road Machine. It's just this is the new Road Machine.
Yep.
And the other one is defunct. So it is a little confusing. Are we going to talk about, it's a BMC, value is not really, do we talk about the price? If you're buying a BMC, it's, you know, the Altegra version of the new Road Machine 01 in Australia's, just doing the conversion from the Swiss francs is like 15,000 Aussie for an Altegra build. I mean, that's, it's not good value.
No.
But it's a BMC, so we probably don't need to go and dig through pricing because, you know, we know there are better value options. That's not probably why you're buying a BMC. DT Swiss wheels on the top level frame. Question for you, Chris.
Mm.
The Road Machine 012.
Right.
That's comes this with one. Yes. Jura Ace and DT Swiss wheels.
Okay.
The Road Machine 011 comes with SRAM Red. And so the one being, this is their, now they're the same price, but this is the SRAM Red build, comes with Zip wheels.
Mm.
Zip, let me check the model. It comes with Zip 303 Firecrest.
Mm.
Would you rather the DT Swiss die cut wheels or the Zip 303?
Get me on some hookless technology, Jesse Coyle. Get me on some hookless. I would. For these, wouldn't have an issue because I know I'm going to probably put a minimum of 34s on these And that's going to be the style of bike that I'm going to ride this with. So I would have no issue running the hookless setup with the low tire pressure and massively wide tires. Yep.
So you'd want the Road Machine 012 with the wheels from the Road Machine 011.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
There's a mouthful?
There's a mouthful.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd probably agree. I'd probably take the zips for wider, especially if you're going to put big fat gravel tires on there. You want the nice wide rim. Those DT Swiss wheels for I mean, I guess this is an endurance bike, but you're probably going to be running 32s on it. So you want a nice wide internal for them. 22 mil is sort of average to even slightly wider. Like if you took the gamut of current rims, the internal width for the disc brake ones, 21 would be the average. So 22 is not terrible.
It's not narrow, but it's when you are inferring the fact you could potentially get a 40 mil tire on this, it is kind of very narrow.
The zip wheels make more sense for what this bike's probably going to do. If it was the BMC team machine or time machine, it would make more. Those DT Swiss wheels probably wouldn't blink an eye.
Yeah, the kind of weird thing. I mean, I suppose the conversation I want to kind of have a little bit about where these bikes are starting to sit is, okay, let's say we do go ahead and put essentially like a gravel tire on this bike. Are you still going to be stuck with your DI2 group set? And having been someone who was for two gravel rides, that bike there with gravel tires on it, running a DI2 group set on a gravel ride is a completely inappropriate thing to be doing. So you start really crossing into bizarre territory of what this bike's designed
because the frame's capable of it and the wheels are probably capable of it if you change the tires. And then you're going, but well, my group set can't really get through this rugged thing, the example of what you did. So then
the answer to the question. The answer to the question is there was a race in Canberra over the weekend, the Heyman Classic,
mm-hmm.
named after Matt Heyman.
Yep.
14K circuits with 6Ks of gravel in each circuit.
Very hard-packed gravel, though. Like that's.
But that's the perfect setup.
Yeah.
Like get some 34 mil tires on it. That would be the absolute. In fact, I think Brendan Johnson actually ran the Defy at that particular event. Like, the perfect setup for that kind of quasi, and you know, there was like that phase about 5 or 6 years ago in the National Road Series where suddenly that was the cool thing to do. All of a sudden you had like 6 or 7K of gravel on a road race all the time.
Yep.
This was like before gravel racing. It was just, we'll put a little bit of gravel in. I think actually this is what these bikes are designed to do rather than 200Ks of backcountry single track.
But the point still stands. The option to build it up as more of a gravel bike because it can take 40 mil tires is good because it's more capable. But it's not as good as it seems because you're actually probably going to need a clutch rear derailleur if you're doing proper off-roady.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All right. That's enough of BMC for now. Will I say this? It's just... They did a press junket launch thing in Girona. Get over it, Chris. I know. But I just think it's such a waste of money. Like, just send the bikes out to the people you want to review them. Oh, just the little frothery things where they all get together and
who went? Where did you see this?
Oh, I saw it on Instagram, actually. Oh. It was like a Cadell was there, and it was the old school press junket.
Tristan
launch.
There,
yes,
or Cam Nichols?
No, Cam wasn't there.
No Cam,
yeah,
okay.
But it looked like mostly sort of legacy Euro media people in Girona,
right,
riding around. Yeah, I don't know. I just see that and I go, "There's 100K you could have saved and cut that off the top line of these bikes, maybe." But anyway, get over it, Chris.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay, so in 2024 we're gonna do some awards at the end of the year, Jesse. Oh, all right, and one of the awards is gonna be for the greatest pandering video of the year. So do you want to explain pandering just quickly? Because we're about to see a prime example.
Pandering. Okay. It is. It's when you if you're making a video about something and then you know it's going to be really appealing to an audience, so you don't even double down. You like quadruple down because you know that they're all going to get in the comments and just be loving it, just loving. But for me to be pandering, it can't be genuine. I feel like there has to be – I have to feel like they're putting it on. And then I'm like, ah, now they're pandering.
Mm.
So what have you got here? What were we just laughing at?
It was – a particular video popped up here from Cycling Weekly called Why I Ditched My Superbike for this 1980s steel road bike, right? Now, it's so over the top that it just, like, every single thing about this was ridiculous. So the pandering begins at the very beginning because
it starts at the title, really. Because
yeah.
It's not I ditched my superbike for a – for a six-year-old, it's for a 1980s
steel frame. And so he's just tried to hit all the absolute marks here. Now, obviously, there was an unfortunate circumstance, which actually plays into the pandering thing as well. You're not going to like me saying that, but it is in the fact that his bike was stolen, okay? Mm-hmm. So unfortunate, sad. Don't replace it with anything similar. It goes and replaces it with this steel frame thing. But it just goes layer on top of layer, down to the extreme that he's found the group set out of a tip.
Out of the tip. Right. So it's no longer I bought a budget group set to really get the juices of the audience flowing. It's got to be spare parts bin. Actually, not spare parts bin. It's got to be discarded bits from the tip. So the Ortega group set is from the tip.
It's like a foraging bill almost. And look, the reason we're laughing about it is not so much the actual bike itself, whatever, cool, you can go do this. It's just, it's the way this is presented because we know that it's going to just absolutely rile up the rim brake crowd, they're on board. The steel frame crowd, they're on board. The modern bike haters, they're on board. The excessive updates, the wastefulness of consumerism, they're on board. You're just piling on the sort of all those crowds who tend to be the sort of most vocal of anyone on YouTube. Get them all together, get them all riled up about one bike.
Now it's the most views they've gotten on a video for the last 3 months. And 3 months ago, the next video, this is the thing. And now they've done, let me bring up. So they've got latest tech from Roubaix. New SRAM spotted. You've got how to make your bike lighter. New wheels from Envy. Now 3 months ago, which was the one that's had the steel bike ones had 63,000. 111,000 views 3 months ago was top 9 best aluminium road bikes for 2024. Light carbon killers. So it's like they have to just keep pandering because they can't match the views by just doing a genuine video. So it has to be, I'm riding a 40-year-old bike. And it's just, yeah.
Do you honestly think like?
But no one's, what? Like, why? How is that going to be compared? What's the, like, it's not even. It's a total different route. Like, how is a steel bike's not going to come close to a new bike? What's it fit, like 19 mil tires?
And if this guy thinks that this is a better solution for himself, or look, and the comments under this would be, oh, these two elitists talking about they only ever want new carbon bikes. We're not actually talking about that. I'm talking just about specifically the content here.
Because this has to say, I ditched my superbike. Yes. You couldn't just say, bike, my bike. Steel bike.
Mm.
It has to fit into some culture war that you're stirring up, but then you're also trying to profit off the other side, which is then showcase the new stuff. Oh, new bike. Oh, and then it's, oh, carbon killer. Oh, steel bike. It's just like tip build.
Mm.
What? Build. Like what?
Yeah. That's it. Now you've said it. Like it is. It is almost getting to the point where it's like a culture war type thing, and then you know what's going to hit home with that audience, and they're going to absolutely—they're just getting in there. I'm sure the comment—I haven't gone in, but I'm sure the comments. Oh yes, this is. You told you you're not going to. You're going to absolutely love this thing because it's just as good. It's not.
It'd be
it's
such
not.
A shit
it's
ride.
A total shit buy compared to what you had, mate. Like it is. Like you're just killing yourself. Absolutely kidding yourself.
Yeah, and he's riding in the wet in the UK.
Yeah.
Like, what are you, like, I don't know. It was, I did have a good, the tip bit.
A little bit along the same line. This is a kind of pandering. So this just sort of got me a little bit, little hairs raised on the back of my head. Because I know Alex is better than this, and I know GCN Tech specifically don't need to do these ones, but it was the end of the rim break question mark. So, rim break crowd already. Oh, don't you dare. Don't you dare take us off. No, don't you dare say a bad thing about rim break. Okay. So you've got us, right? I love this bike, but it has to go.
Okay.
Oh, so you do like the rim break. I'm intrigued. I will click. And it's basically Alex talking about the Pinarello Dogma that he was basically lent from Pinarello, rim break bike. And it was a love-in. It was a love-in about how much he loved the rim brake bikes. So pandering to that crowd, absolutely. And I suppose the disappointing part from my perspective is I would have loved, because this is the key point for GCN where I think it's different for all the other slop channels like us and normal people. These videos are so big, their channels are so big that someone who's just getting into the sport has no idea about rim brakes and disc brakes, no idea. Mm-hmm. We'll click on this and want to know, oh, so what's the difference? Because they've got to keep churning this stuff out because that's what people in this space want to know with them.
Okay.
And it was just a love-in about rim brakes, and he has to get rid of it because Pinarello want the bike back.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so, you know, the end of rim brakes question mark was a clickbait around – well, it's not really the end of rim brakes. It's just you've got to give this bike back now. So it's not – we're not delving into the reasons why the end of rim brakes happening. And I think that's what lets me down on this particular video, because it was a good way of him – and to not pander here, he would have had to go, well, at the end, he would have had to go, okay, well, I'm not going to have my rim brakes anymore. I'm going to go – I'm going to move permanently to disc brakes. And here is what I think the advantages of disc brakes are in this particular circumstance. That wouldn't have pandered to it, because the comments would have gone nuts around that from the rim brake crowd, but it actually would have been a really useful and informative bit of content for people who are genuinely interested in the differences of rim brake and disc brake. So GCN Tech, you don't need to pander. You've got 7 bazillion subscribers. Just give us informative content. Fair call. I mean, the reality is that you're pandering. I mean, we pandered last week when we're sitting here talking about, oh, Jesse's.
Well, now am I pandering because I'm doing an Asia bill?
So man of the people, Jesse. They're going to love you, the man of the people. Yeah. I mean, but I think where the pandering.
But I want disc brakes so I can run wider tires.
And you're going to at least give us, well, hopefully, I want to know the pros and the cons. I don't want you to just give us the what the panderers would love is that it's just, oh, I told you, this L2 is going to shit all over the triple priced SRAM. That's would be the sort of narrative that would cut through there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I wrote L2. Shimano are fleecing us. You could do it. Oh, they could sell that for a quarter the price. You're getting ripped off. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I will check my panda. We've got to have like a panda scale. Just that cycling weekly one. It was uploaded to now. It is the 10th of April, and it was uploaded 2 weeks ago. So it was like. Surprisingly close to April 1st. So, was it? Because it looks, if you were going to make a satirical video kind of poking fun at the culture wars,
true.
You would make this video.
It's true.
Like, I sold my Canyon S, my Cervelo S5, and moved to a 40-year-old steel bike. Like that would be funny, like because you'd be joking.
It's kind of like it does have a bit of a Monty Python like satirical tone to it. Yeah, potentially it is. Do you legitimately think old mate will be riding that bike in 12 months?
No.
No chance.
Well, if he's riding once a week.
He rides, supposedly.
I don't see how. That would maybe. We'll see. Well, let's have to bookmark it.
Pandering. We're watching.
Panda police.
Panda police. The panda police. That's it. Joe, make us a t-shirt. Panda police. So I did mention last week that we reached out to Giant just about in terms, just to try and get our heads around, because we sit here and we talk about like what we want to see from bikes, blah, blah, blah. I don't know whether some of these results have left me thinking I'm more out of touch than ever, but mate, I think I'm more out of touch than ever.
Right. Yep.
Do you want to go through some of this stuff?
Yeah. So in Australia, sales of Giant bikes in 2023. What's their top selling bike?
It's the TCR.
It's the TCR.
Which we called.
Yeah.
We did call that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About 39% of their sales in Australia. What's the next one?
Mm.
Now, this doesn't include mountain bikes.
No.
This is just road or off-road.
Yep.
Road drop bar models,
I should say. I would have thought the Defy would be the next model.
Yeah. So it's not even close. The next closest one is the Revolt, which is their gravel bike, at a third pretty much last year is their offer, which I how many times have I seen a Revolt not on under some commuter somewhere?
But I think that's maybe that's the point here, is that Revolt range. So for those of you who don't know this, the range of Giant's Revolt is the gravel bike. It also has a, under this heading, it has a model, I think called the Revolt X or something, which has a suspension fork in it. So there is potential that you may be stealing some of the mountain bike crowd into that crew as well. But that definitely did surprise me. And to have that number being double what the Defy is, I don't know whether that, and that has shifted. So in 2019, that number was closer to 20% on the Revolt, and it was almost level between the Defy and the Revolt. And I think that's the biggest thing for me, is like 5 years ago, the Revolt and the Defy were almost level, and now it's not even close. And that sort of backs up the chat that we were having last week about where does this Defy sit? Who's coming to take its share? Well, it's not the TCR people. They're solid. They're solid as a rock. They're roadies. They're friggin' rusted on. Mm-hmm. All good. It's the gravel crowd that are now seeing the Revolt, the gravel bike, being, hey, you know what? I don't need to get that endurance road bike because I can get the gravel bike and it sort of does those things. And they've come to take the endurance crowd. So you can kind of see then why these brands are leaning more and more into the off-road stuff when it comes to the road endurance.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Side, because that's the crowd that are stealing the sales off it.
Mm-hmm. What did you make of the Propel? So before they updated it to the new version, it was It was basically...
It was a basket
It was
case.
Nothing. It was single-digit sales as a percent. Big bump when they released the new model, which is not surprising given how much they updated it. But it's still, last year, only 15%. But that's the only bike, really, that the pro team rode. It's from the performance side of thing, it's really the only bike you saw on YouTube or anywhere or in the road space. And it's still...
But it's doubled where it's come from.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that's worth noticing. So in 2019, it's like 8%. It had gone up to 15% in 2023. And I think you're probably going to see that keep going up in 2024 as people sort of watch more of this crap and realize that aero bikes are sort of taking place. And it's probably that going to be that slow trickle away from the TCR crowd that will go in there. I don't know. You seem a bit underwhelmed by that number. I will say not to shit on it, but the Propel had a pretty bad reputation amongst the racing crowd as a really harsh bike, especially towards the back end of its rim brake life. It was a pretty rough rig. Good value, but rough rig. And that takes a few generations for people to probably forget, maybe. All right, that's the life and times of endurance chat. Let's have a break from that, shall we? For a couple of weeks, I reckon. I think we've covered that base.
We've got a lot of smaller topics to get through, so we're gonna go a bit scattergun speed approach now. First one, MV Composites did a post that you sent to me, being, "Oh, MV have doubled down on hookless." So they have. So 5 days ago on Instagram, and I think they did a press release along with it, basically saying since 2016, we've embraced hookless. We've done these high volume road wheels. It's to quote, "We believe the benefits to the user that a hookless rim design allows us to provide. These benefits are not limited to performance, but also rim strength and bead seat diameter consistency, which makes for a safer tubeless rim diameter interface."
So full double down.
They have just gone in. Now, not only have they done the post about it, they've also been in there replying to people's comments, reiterating why they think hookless is so good. "The current pinnacle of performance is tubeless, and hookless delivers the pinnacle of hookless performance and safety." That doesn't really make too much sense. I think they're saying hookless is the pinnacle of tubeless performance. And so they're in the comments just going for gold. What did you think?
I just love it. "Don't believe us? Ask our professional road racers who livelihoods have results and depend on it. Our UAE team Emirates team." Yeah, except when they blow off on the middle of, yeah. Look, what choice do they have? Of course they're going to double down. This is classic. This is what you would do, right? It kind of sounds lame, but just stick with me. Like, the education of this still isn't good enough. And by that, I mean I want big warning stickers on the wheels, on the tires. Even when you're buying this, and you're buying it from a local online retailer, buying the wheels, buying the tires, whatever it might be, I want check boxes to say that you are aware of the regulations around this. Even if there was ways of, when you're inflating the tire, that like some sort of indicator is sort of being made aware as you're actually doing it, Look, I don't disagree that when this stuff is installed correctly and it's on the tire correctly, there's no issues. But that is not the reality of consumer cycling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of where I'm left with this. And it's on the brands who pushed this on us, who forced this on us, for seemingly still no good reason other than it's cheaper for them to make. And that's the thing that still hurts about it, that it's not then just good enough to say, no, we told you so. We're telling you it's okay. Trust us. Our pro teams believe us too. Like, that's not good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. But envy to do it, I actually don't care as much. couple of reasons. If they believe, firstly, okay, let me start that again. MV wheels are generally an aftermarket product. They don't come spec on that many stock bikes. So if you're going to MV to buy a set of wheels and MV say, this is our path forward, this is the only way to make what they believe to be the market leading wheel set. It has to be hookless because that's how you make it X grams lighter to save a watt or 2 watts or whatever. If MV believe that and that's what they want to do, they're selling 4 grand wheel sets. I don't really care because someone's going to go and buy them aftermarket. And if they want what's apparently the cream of the crop, the best thing, and if that has to be hookless, okay, well, that is what it is. I get it's more that if the manufacturers are doing it for wheel sets that are coming stock on bikes, that's where I get a bit annoyed because people buying the bikes don't have any idea that they are hookless. And also I'll mention, what happened to choice? You're buying from MV, which is one of the most expensive brands of wheels. So you're paying that money. Shouldn't that mean they can have a greater range? Mm. I don't really understand why they can't do a hooked version, which can be perceived as lower performance if they want. Now, it costs more to manufacture, but they could sell it for a bit cheaper. And just like Zip have the Zip Firecrest, and then they have the 303S, the sort of more budget ones. Why can't the more value-orientated ones, which are more likely going to go to someone that doesn't know anything about hookless, why can't they be hooked? So you're paying more for less choice. But at the end of the day, if it's MV want to do it and want to double down and they say, this is what we need to do to get the absolute marginal gains, so be it. When it's Giant doing it with the Giant SLR wheels that they're going to go through tens of thousands of wheel sets, I don't like it as much.
Mm. UCI has gone very quiet on the whole, oh, we're doing an investigation in this, haven't they? I think they potentially just did that to get good publicity at the time, and we will all happily move on from there. But anyway, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it's MV. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, another random one for you. Wow. I've seen this a bit recently. So we've just come through summer, obviously. And every time I go out for a ride, it doesn't matter the conditions. We've had a pretty hot and humid summer. I will always see someone in a long sleeve jersey. Now, this isn't someone who just feels the cold. I guarantee you it is someone who has selected the long sleeve jersey because it seems like they've been sold the good old fashioned concept of some wicking technology. All right. So I've seen these sort of summer long sleeve jerseys. I even had a look at some of them. There were quite a few little Peaks videos that popped up, guys out doing their vlogs of the day, melting up the back of Falls as everyone did with their long sleeve summer wicking technology jersey on. Now, it does seem like MAP and Attacker are the main offenders of this. When I say offenders, I mean the main protagonists for somehow having managed to infiltrate the psyche and the coolness and the sneeze factor of these riders to think that it's not only a performance advantage, but clearly it looks cool.
What's your problem with it? I mean, because it keeps the sun off. Isn't that the whole point?
My problem with it
stops your arms getting burnt.
Yes, true. But my point is that so does sunscreen, and these guys are friggin' melting themselves. Like, sorry, it's hotter to wear a long sleeve shirt.
Well, that's the question, is it? Does it make you hotter to wear one of these really thin, light colored wicking fabrics on your arm?
So this is this Evade Pro Base Long Sleeve Jersey 2.0, right? And this is, here he is standing there in that thing.
The Evade 102 jersey.
Yes. BMC would be happy. Ultra soft fabric paired with advanced moisture wicking technology to keep you cool and dry even when the pace is on. And these are so popular.
Okay.
I'm sorry. They're just stupid.
Sweat works by sitting on your skin and pulling through the moisture gradient, pulling heat away from your skin. So the idea that a fabric's wicking.
Wicking.
It's a picture
of something wicking. See?
It's wicking, right.
It's got a little flower, so it must be wicking.
If that's pulling the moisture off the skin. Mm. So I'm not convinced that that's making it easier for heat to cross from your blood through your skin into the sweat if the sweat's sitting off you in the fabric. The only time that would, I think that could be a benefit, if you're sweating so much that, and this happens with base layers, that if you're sweating so much that the sweat's actually just dripping away from you and not sitting on your skin, then you probably would be better off with a light mesh layer that holds the sweat across your skin and gives it more time for that heat to escape into your sweat by evaporating off the sweat.
Agreed.
But generally, if you're riding, the sweat pulls on your arms because that is exposed to the wind. Unless it's super, super humid and that sweat just doesn't have time to evaporate, so it just starts dripping off. In my opinion, that's not helping you cool down. You're better off having the skin exposed to the wind so it can evaporate sweat. Base layers, more questionable because sometimes it's hard to get the wind flow to there, so the base layer can help. But on your arms, no, it's an SPF.
Walker. Here's the truth. The truth is they do look cool. They look really nice. I must admit.
Not in the heat.
Well, that's the thing, because you're rolling out. It's all happy days. You look kind of pro in this thing. It looks like, you know, streamlined and kind of slim cut and everything. And it's like that nice color block whole way down your arm. And it's got that textured thing on it. Looks really cool. The problem happens when you start riding really hard up a hill in the heat. And you all of a sudden discover that you've got more clothing on than you need and you're a sweaty mess. And I will try and pull up some of the videos I found of guys. They've fully unzipped these things. They're flapping about in the wind and in all sorts of trouble.
You can't tell me you wouldn't be getting the urge to roll those sleeves up.
Oh, yeah.
Like you would. You'd be like, why? Yeah.
I mean, I'm frigging rolling up the sleeves on our bloody skin suit half the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, this whole show is just going to turn into some two blokes whinging about stuff all day. But anyway,
to balance you out, I was on the Factor website the other day as I do. And then I was up here, Prisma Studio. I thought, all right, I got to say, this is the best bike industry sales page website I've ever used. So Factor have this Prisma Studio custom paint where they allow you to custom design the color of the paint. Now, it's not something where you go in, it looks like Photoshop, and you're just like, I can't figure this out. It's too hard. Basically, you pick the model of your bike. So let's go Ostrovam. You can choose a block or a gradient color. Please do not pick gradient. You're definitely going the block option. And then you can just go gloss or matte finish. And then they've got a few different options that you can customize the paint for. So you've got the base color, which is the front end of the frame, and the chainstays and the seat stays. So they've got a range of colors. So you can go yellow, you can go gold. You can pick through there. Then you've got the accent color, which is the seat post. You can go and change that. So you can go like yellow and blue, looks all right. Then you go logo color. So you can change what color the Factor logo is on the side and the front. You can also select the wheel set color. So you can have the wheel set logos blinged out to match the color of the frame. And this is all one click and it comes up. Now, when you click it, it also instantly updates the mock-up of the frame in a really high-quality image too. And this is easily the best. Like, I'm sitting here going, and then it just says, buy this bike. I mean, that's, you could really impulse buy yourself a custom Factor painted. I just had to give it a shout out.
There's something that works really well about this. Now, I know a lot of people will say, oh, Trek have been doing this for years, the Trek... Trick, what's it called?
Project One's
been able to do this for years. I think because Factor have proven themselves as the direct-to-consumer, you buy here, you ship type thing, the design of it is just, it's more advanced. It just feels less 1994 website. Than the Trek one. I mean, I'm on the Trek one now.
I'm on the Trek one. So you click through and then you click. So you go, okay, I want to custom design my thing. Okay. And then it says, pick your model. Okay. It's the Madone SLR. Okay, cool. Then it's, well, what group set do you want? So I haven't even started customizing the paint yet. Okay, build. Click build.
No.
Choose your thing. Like, what the frick?
No.
You just click Prisma Studio and then you're in there within 5 seconds and I'm in here playing around with the paint. I was doing it the other night.
The reality of this is that this is so easy to impulse purchase. You could easily come home from the pub or something, start designing your, what is it, your Prisma Studios, yep. Wake up the next morning, be like, what have I done? Whereas with the Trek, you can't do that. You send it to the retailer. You see? It's not, you don't click buy and 3 weeks later your bike arrives. You click send to retailer. It goes to the local retailer. They call you up. You then liaise. You get cold feet. You're like, oh, I had a few drinks. I don't really want to do this anymore. There's too many roadblocks to the full impulse purchase on the Trek one.
But just the Trek one is just like, it's clunky. This is so good. The Factor one. That's really, I spent embarrassingly long time customizing the configurations. I took a screenshot. A red and yellow. If I was Spanish, I'd probably run this one. I reckon it looks pretty sick. And interesting as well, just because I look into this stuff, the default spec that they're showing it with is SRAM Red, not with Shimano.
Interesting.
See, SRAM, that's what they want. They would have sit, because someone would have decided that. What are we going to mock it up with? Will we mock it up with the Marquee Road group set, which is SRAM Red? I just thought that was, they've done a, whoever does the Factor website, kudos. Pretty cool.
I want to give a quick shout just for a good old fashioned rider. Race vlog type thing. So Boris Clark, he's a St. George Conti rider, he's Kiwi. So St. George Conti are, well, a continental team in Australia, but they are well and truly just on the Asian UCI circuit. So doing a lot of the 2.1s, 2.2s, those sort of things around there. And he is trying to do a couple of vlogs at them. They were just recently at the Tour of Thailand. Now, if you ever want to get a bit of an idea about what like a non-professional cyclist's, I know it sounds a bit lame, but like life is like on these tours, in this life, it's not a bad little look at it. Like this, I was getting a few Tour of the Philippines flashbacks here looking at some of this stuff. Just raw, hot, just horrible, basically, bike riding that just goes completely off into this distance. And it's just like these guys are they're just trying to get some result or something here might be the catalyst. There's lots of different
It is. Yeah, it is good seeing that sort of thing. Just aside from that, like the St. George team, like what's it, they got so many older riders that are not going to go pro. They wouldn't be getting paid anything. So they're not sort of making salary. The team's not making any money off them. I just don't understand what a team like this is getting out of it. I mean, it's going to be run by volunteers. There's no ROI from sponsors. The riders probably pay for contributions for most of the stuff. It's just interesting that it's good that the team still exists because it gives riders a chance to race. But I'm just kind of like it's got a lot of older riders. You know, Benny Carman still kicking around there. He's 28. Aiden Buttigieg, 26. You know, even Boris Clark, 29. Alex Evans, he's 27. I mean, Cam Ivory. I mean, There's how many under 23 riders on there? One. There's two under 23 riders on this team. What's it exist for? If you were running that team, wouldn't you want to try and get more, at least more under 23 guys, just that haven't had a shot?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer.
It's just I watched the vlog of them, in Thailand. Good video and good opportunity to go race the Tour of Thailand. But what's you know, well, what's Nick Kyrgios, who's a track rider for the New Zealand, you know, national team. What's he need to go and race Tour of Thailand for? They got volunteers over there helping out for you know, 28-year-olds to go and race a Conti race. It's just, it's an interesting, the way some of these Conti teams run. You just go.
I don't know. I really don't know enough about it. I actually wish I probably would have looked into this if I knew we were going to go.
I just saw the video. I thought, what, like, this is just a bit, what, yeah. I mean, people, yeah, it's just, this stuff doesn't just run. This stuff takes organization. They're in the matching kit. They're on bikes. You know, that's someone spending hours and hours and more than hours, like days. This is someone's time going into to run this team. It's interesting how this stuff just keeps ticking over. Yeah. Similarly as well, you sent this one to me as well. Willie Smith did another vlog from a sort of a lower level UCI race and bombing down this descent. I don't know if you had any comments on it, but just what was the point? More like the risks that some of these riders are willing to take.
I just more sent you that, and obviously I'll play some of this while I'm talking about it, but it was more just the sense of, this is a random UCI race in the middle of nowhere with no one you've ever heard of doing these races, and they're all just risking life and limb down a descent because that's what bike races do. Like, I don't have any other point than that. It's just like, this is what bike races, and I know we talk a lot about safety and making things safer for riders, and there's absolutely a time and a place for trying to put chicanes in before Arenberg Forest to slow people down. But I think my point with this was just, like, you watch this descent, and bike races are just fucking insane. Like, they will just chop you, cut you off, because they're all fighting so hard for every square inch of some nondescript bike race. There is no safety net, really. Right. Like, that's kind of my point. And because I heard them talking on like GCN show or something about, oh, there's more crashes now, we're going faster. Ultimately it's on the riders to look after themselves and et cetera, et cetera. But you know, you look at this footage and that's not what bike races are. Bike races are, as I said, fucking insane.
You can't go. If someone's handlebars are creeping up ahead of you, what do? You pedal a bit harder and you overtake them, and then they come and try and get ahead of you. It's just who can go the fastest.
And if you spot a weakness in someone next to you, your first reaction is exploit that weakness and push past them. Like, that's just the way bike racers think. And so, I don't know, like, I just felt like the narrative of the, oh, there's too many crashes, was trying to be like, well, we all just need to chill out and just relax a little bit. But my thing was more, well, there are thousands and thousands of guys, just like these people bombing down this descent, who are fighting to get into that upper echelon. If they found out that the upper echelon was softening out, they'd be replaced by the people bombing down like this. So I don't know. I always just come back to this thing of, like, just bike racing, you know? It's pretty tough.
Yeah. Can I go total random one?
Mm-hmm.
This will be big throwback. This is going to be there can't be many people listening that are going to – this is going to bring up memories for. Did you ever watch Bike Man for You?
I had no idea what you were talking about.
Welcome. Bike Man for You coming live from Florida. This is Bike Man for You. Now, he hasn't uploaded a video for 7 years. So this is one of my first cycling YouTube memories. So what this was is this quirky dude with the big mullet rat tail thing. And every Saturday he'd live stream from his bike shop in Florida. So he had it set up. So he had a wireless lav mic, and then he must have had 20 cameras all around this bike shop and someone there live switching between them. And this is a 3.5 hour live stream on a Saturday morning, and he'd just live stream what he's doing. I'm working on an old rally, whatever. I got to change the stem, and this was it. So this is probably my earliest cycling YouTube memory, is watching Bike Man for You. I don't know where he's gone. I don't know if the bike shop still exists. I'd also, just from a technical point of view, this is pretty
advanced.
This is 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Wireless mics, someone live flipping between them, zooming in, moving the cameras around. We'd struggle to get this set up.
So was it GC performance spec where he would like go to the bikes and was it or like this is the
no
is
he's
the,
working on like crappy commuter clunkers, just right? clunkers it's but it's just him chatting through it, and he's very sort of charismatic. I don't know, maybe charismatic's not the right word, just a quirky kind of very outgoing guy. And I don't know, I've spent many an hour watching a Bike Man for You live stream, which must have been 8 years ago. Must have been that I must have just maybe bought my first road bike at that stage. Yeah.
I completely missed this, I must say.
Actually, 8 years ago, no. My concept of time is I was 8 years ago, it was 2016, so I was already. No,
you were well and
truly. I bought my first road bike well before that. It feels like a long time ago, though. Yeah.
I was just thinking then, what was my first memory of cycling YouTube? Probably is Duran Rider. Like,
back what? 2000 and well, there wasn't that many people making cycling videos. So you'd have him, GCN,
Maven.
Yep. Just funny. He just had these side quests. It'd be like, this person's left their bike outside for 3 years, and the stem's seized, and it's just him spending an hour trying to get the bolts undone. Yeah, that just popped up. I thought that was. Does anyone remember Bike Man for You?
All right, Jesse, I better let you get on the road and pedal home.
Mm-hmm. You've thrown a curveball to the outro, and I'm thinking, am I meant to elaborate?
Well, it's just a headwind for you home, so, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Get stuck in.
It is. Thanks for listening to us this week.
We'll see you very soon.
Next week. See you then.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.